I started looking at the culture differently. I started seeing how it was being, and I was very critical how it was being represented, because I want my child to learn about their heritage culture and be proud about their heritage culture. I don't want stereotypes.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Tuckered Out with me, Ami Tucker. I just got back from Podcast Movement in LA, which is probably the biggest podcast conference out there. We hosted, as the Podcast Academy Board, the annual AMBY Awards, which is kind of like the Oscars for us audio nerds. And it was pretty exciting. I was nominated this year for Best Indie Host. And although I didn't win, it was pretty amazing sitting next to all these fantastic podcasters doing their thing. These are podcasters that I listen to. And it's true, being nominated is such an honor anyways. So yeah, I had a fantastic week, but you can maybe tell from my extra raspy voice, I am now in recovery mode. But that did not stop me from my interview today. Today, I get to talk to Anu Sehgal and Priya Krishna. Anu is a children's author and the founder of The Culture Tree, a cultural literacy and language education company that focuses on South Asia. Priya is a food reporter and video host for The New York Times and the best-selling author of multiple cookbooks, including Indian-ish and Cooking at Home. And we discuss her latest book, Priya's Kitchen Adventures. So in collaboration with Asia Society, The Culture Tree will be hosting their first annual AAPI Children's Literary Festival. This event features readings, meet and greet sessions with authors like Priya, illustrators, panel discussions, and writing workshops. The festival will serve as a very unique gathering place for writers, illustrators, publishers, and fans of AAPI literary works, and is really focusing on the youth engagement. It will be in person Saturday, May 11th from 1 to 5 p.m. at 725 Park Avenue, New York City. That's the Asia Society. I will write it all in my notes, but I hope you guys enjoy our very fun interview with Anu and Priya.
You know, I've just decided at this point in my life, I'm going to work with good people. That's it. I don't want bad energy, and I'm not going to promote people who don't deserve promoting, but I will go completely behind people who really deserve it and are kind and giving, because that is a part of who they are.
Yeah, those are the people that deserve the spotlight that sometimes just don't get it. Totally. I'm the same page. Like, good energy, good people. I will interview people. I don't care how big they are anymore. I've learned my lesson quite a bit. It has to be just a good person. But let's start before Priya hops on. Let's spotlight the Culture Tree. And of course, you know, I've read about it and know you guys, but I would like you to talk about the Culture Tree, the journey up till now, and kind of describe what you guys are doing.
The Culture Tree is a cultural literacy and language education platform. And we focus on, firstly, the South Asian American children. And we make sure they are fully immersing in their heritage culture and languages, building a bridge between them and their heritage culture. We want them to be proud of their identity. We want them to be really proud about all the aspects of their culture and stay connected with their culture. And we provide all tools to help with that. I myself am a language educator, so language education is a very important part of who I am and what I am as a parent and as a teacher, as a linguist. So that is a very important aspect of what we do. Then the second big pillar for the Culture Tree is cultural literacy that is focused on South Asia. And also bringing forward all the diverse cultures that exist within South Asia. Because that's one thing that I feel is really lacking right now. There is a one dimension in which South Asian cultures are viewed. We are all lumped into one person, but we are not. We are one of the most diverse subcontinents, and India is one of the most diverse countries in this world. So really going below the surface And the point of differentiation for the culture tree is the educational aspect. Whatever we do will have an educational aspect. It can be a huge celebration, but we will, in our best way, bring in, you know, nuggets of information, geographic information, cultural information. That is, sometimes even South Asians tell us, oh, we didn't know about whatever you were talking about. So that is the extent to which we want to go in terms of education. And the third thing that's all by itself happening for the Culture Tree is we've become a community-based organization, especially in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. Politicians, the mayor's office, the governor's office, the consulate, they're coming to us to reach the community and also to represent the community. And the community is coming to us, artists, writers and dancers, they're coming to us and saying, this is what we can do. Can you help us showcase our talent and what we are good at? All these little things that have happened and the way we have evolved, most of it has been very organic. This has been a transformational year for us. We are very busy and we have some amazing projects that are coming through and the whole community is going behind us. It is very heartwarming to see that. So I would say net-net, if people are thinking of the Culture Tree, it is anything South Asian and children related. We are a national organization, as you know by now, and we really hope we can build understanding, a deeper understanding towards South Asian cultures and build empathy in children, in families, and people in general. And pride for our children, South Asian American children, about their culture and really delve deeper into the heritage culture.
Love it all. Yeah. As someone who's been following you and feels like I've known you forever, who's someone who's been following you, I've seen the growth just through social media, all these amazing events you're doing, like you said, working with the mayor and the city, and I know it's grown amazingly. One, I didn't realize that you were a linguist. I know you're, you know, it says cultural educator on your site. Tell me a little bit about that and your background with that.
I grew up, as you know, in India, and my household was a little unique because my mother is Muslim, my father is Hindu. So it was an inter-religious marriage and a very...
So that's a big deal for that
that's
time.
That's a very big deal for our parents' generation and a very secular, tolerant household. We celebrated all... And I went to a Catholic school, so everything was celebrated. And of course, you know, most Indians speak, are multilingual. They speak many languages. I grew up in UP in a town called Meerut. And given my household and given the place where I grew up, we heard Hindi, Urdu, Punjabi, Gujarati all the time. And of course, Meerut is known for the pure Hindi and the pure Urdu and the amalgamation, the Hindustani that is spoken. That was my background. And then once I started the Culture Tree, I really started delving deeper into Hindi and the ways in which we can teach the language, specifically for children. So I worked with StarTalk, which is an absolutely amazing program based in several universities in the US. And they do teacher training for developing curriculum and also teaching students these South Asian languages. So I have gone through that training. I have developed the curriculum along with my teachers, some of whom are also trained in StarTalk. And we follow a very specific way of teaching the languages because our kids are very different. The exposure they have to their native languages is very different than the kids from other cultures. And there is a very unique aspect that is involved with South Asian languages, which we can talk about for hours. When I've been teaching Hindi language now for 8 years, now I'm not doing any direct teaching because I don't have time, but I am the substitute. If any of my teachers are sick, I'm the substitute.
Amazing.
And it's one of the most rewarding experiences. And we really include our kids you know, the American children's learning, the way they learn is different. So we include that in our teaching curriculum and methodology.
That's amazing. How many kids do you guys have now?
So we have around 150 kids enrolled.
Wow.
Yeah. So Hindi, Urdu, Gujarati, and Punjabi. Those are the four languages.
Okay. And I thought about you guys, I mean, this is 100% my fault, but thought about enrolling my kids many times. You know, I was born and raised here, and my parents put me in Gujarati classes for years. And my Gujarati is still pretty, you know, elementary level, but I have it in me. You know, it's definitely like part of my DNA. And like many parents, South Asian American parents born and raised here, I know I struggle quite a bit to teach them the way my parents taught me. It's just a different time. And it feels like life is just crazier and busier for us for whatever reasons. And so I definitely have a guilt that, am I giving them enough? And that's why, back to like wanting to join in. And again, I've been thinking about you guys, but we really need the culture tree and organizations like yours, because I think for us and our time, like, that is what probably the best way for them to learn, due to the fact that many of us, A, don't have the time, and B, maybe don't even know as much as we should ourselves.
It's not easy. Like, I don't play the piano. How can I help my child? And then the other thing is just, we are so busy. Parents are just, in America especially, I think overall also all over the world, we are time starved. We need help. We need all the support we can get to really introduce different things to our kids' lives.
Yeah, and we want them to be confident, right? You know, growing up here in the 80s, I definitely had the, am I Indian? Am I American? What does that mean? Even though I went to Mandir every Sunday, I went to like Hindu camps every summer, I was like really involved in our culture and our community. But still, growing up here, you question, and you know, I can't wear those Indian outfits at school. And you're a little bit scared to be proud. Not, you know, that's changed over the years, but it is important for my girls to be proud now as kids, so it stays with them. I wanted to ask you, I know you moved here about 25 years ago, correct?
Almost 30 years, yeah.
And I'm sure that experience was part of the impetus for starting all of this. How was your experience when you first moved here?
So it was a very immigrant experience when I moved here. All I wanted to do was assimilate and learn the American accent, learn about the American culture. And in those days, even the ATM machine was foreign to me. And I came as a student. So I think it's easier once you come as a student because you find your little group. But I was not interacting with Indian culture when I moved because I had the foundation. But when I had my kids, things changed completely.
That's when things change, yes.
And it was just like I started looking at the culture differently. I started seeing how it was being, and I was very critical, how it was being represented. Because I want my child to learn about their heritage culture and be proud about their heritage culture. I don't want stereotypes. I don't want things that will make them and me cringe. So it was just a total 360 reversal. And, you know, as parents, we are very passionate.
Yeah, yes.
So all that passion came through. And I live in New York City. So we see the cultures from different countries represented. You know, the Met has all these amazing permanent exhibits. And everywhere we are seeing our restaurants and performances and stuff. But the way it was being portrayed to children was totally problematic. And the other thing is, children don't learn in a passive way. They have to be fully immersed.
Yes, put it in their face.
Ask them questions. Yeah. Talk to them in a language that they understand. And also make it very interactive.
Yeah, and I think they also have to see the parents being passionate, that we care. Because if we don't care, they're going to be like, well, why should we?
Yeah. So that was a huge reversal. And also, you know, I come from marketing and business background. I was looking for white space. I was looking for a place where we really were not seeing presence. And this was a total white space and still is. Like, there has been so much that has happened in the last, I would say, 5 years. But still, sky's the limit, I feel.
Yes. Oh, of course. I feel like we're just getting started, in fact.
We're just getting started.
You know, it feels like now there is this, I don't want to call it a movement because that sounds hokey, but there's something happening with our community, with representation, with, I think, all of us just wanting to come out and getting our voices heard. You know, I know it's been building, but it feels somewhat like an explosion, right?
Yeah, I agree.
And it's exciting. And I obviously, this should not be a movement or a phase. It should just stay, hopefully.
Yeah.
So can I assume you have kids, obviously. How do they view what mom does? And are they really involved in it with you? Like, what is their part in it?
The funniest thing is I have two kids. My older one is 15 and he started high school. My younger one is 12. He's in middle school. And my older one, he has a very linguist mind or brain. So he gets languages rather easy. And then my younger one is like, he loves learning Hindi language, but he's like, oh, I can experiment and I can try different things. And I'm like, not my son. Like,
You're like, do you know what mom does? Do you have any idea?
Proof is in the pudding. So both of them have been learning. That's the reason I started the Culture Tree for the first time, was because I was looking for language classes for my kids and I was just not finding anything. So they love their heritage culture. They speak Hindi. In fact, when we were in India in December, my kids and my nephews, they had gone to purchase T-shirts at Palika Bazaar in Delhi. So you haggle.
Nice. Yeah.
They were haggling in, negotiating in Hindi.
Did you? You must have cried. That must have been like a proud moment.
And I wanted to record it, but they're like, no, nothing goes on social media. So I couldn't
record it. But you're like, it's for the business.
Yeah,
come on.
I know, exactly. That was real.
Was that I'm assuming not their first time in India.
That was, actually, yeah.
That was.
Yeah.
Hi,
Priya. You guys, this is very exciting for me. Anytime I do interviews with more than one person, like the tech issue, I don't know, something always goes wrong. So I'm very proud of both of you for some reason. Sorry, Priya, we were just discussing how Anu's kids are involved with the Culture Tree and kind of their take on it. Anu, I don't know if you know, I lived in India twice, once on my own. I lived in Bombay and tried to become like the VH1 VJ stuff. I don't remember. This is a long time ago when I was young and free. And then I lived there again for 3 years through my husband's job. He's with Pepsi. So we were expats in Delhi and then in Bangalore. So we actually drove across UP to get to Rishikesh, I think, and really got to know India very well. My Hindi was actually on fire. I was like on top of my game. And I have lost it all again.
So. It'll come back.
It will come back. Let's start talking about the Lit Fest. Anu, would love to hear about the partnership with Asia Society and then how this all came about.
So I have been thinking of hosting a Lit Fest for a while. I actually did host one pre-pandemic and it was very successful. I hosted it with Indo-American Arts Council. And this particular concept of Lit Fest has been in my head for about 5 years. And the hope is to bring authors, illustrators from South Asian origin to share their stories with children. And talking about identity is a part of that, whether it is, you know, the illustrator sharing what they are reflecting in their illustrations. But I wanted to layer it with youth engagement. And that's the point of differentiation. I really, now that I have a teenager, I really feel that once our second-gen kids, they are in middle school or high school, the engagement with their heritage culture takes a backseat. There is too much going on. They're very busy. I grew up in India, so I don't know, but I'm observing this. And that has been a huge priority for me as a parent and as an educator, because I'm seeing that all the parents are coming and talking to me, saying that we have been with your program. how can our kids be involved? And our kids are no longer our captive audience.
All of us parents are like, please help us. We are desperate.
Yeah.
Help our kids.
So they're not our captive audience. They're captive audience till they're in elementary school. Otherwise, you can't even tell a 12-year-old to go with you to any place. So this basically, it's combining those two things. Our LitFest will be at Asia Society. And I've been working with Asia Society now for a few years. And they have been just amazing partners. Their building is so beautiful and it is just ideal for children to blossom and learn in different ways. So our LitFest is going to be a half a day event in which we will start with book reading and a panel discussion with authors and illustrators. And the panel discussion will be managed by high school. So this is an AAPI, LitFest, not just South Asian. So the high schoolers from the AAPI community are going to be moderating.
I love that.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And they're just so excited. They keep sending me their questions and they're like, oh, yeah, this is what we read. So they're already very excited. And then we will go down and, to their museum store where all the authors and illustrators will have a table and they will talk to children and get photographs and their books signed by the authors and illustrators. And then after that, we are going to go to a different floor where we will have a writer's workshop, which is headed by Veera Hiranandani, who is a Newbery Award-winning author. I love her books. And then we will also have an illustration workshop. Each child will get a sketchbook in which they will literally start writing. They'll come up with a concept, start writing, they'll start illustrating. And then after that, our grand finale will be with Priya.
Ah, who we know, we kind of know now.
Yeah, and Priya will read from her latest book. And then she will also host dumpling making workshop. And then we will also have the children write recipes, which Priya will lead, because we feel even the recipe writing process has become such a, like kids don't know how to document. They don't even read recipes because they're always watching TikTok videos. So that is a lost art and we want to bring it back.
I love all of this. I really want to come. I need to figure out how to come. My schedule and life in general. I know my kids would love this. Maybe by some miracle, I can figure this out. This sounds amazing. And I've lived in New York twice. I've never actually been to the Asia Society, so I would love to check it out and see it. This sounds fantastic. I love this idea. Priya, why don't you talk to us about how you got involved? I was just YouTubing you for the last hour and a half. Me and my girls were watching your videos. It was so fun. And also, I'm a fellow Dallasite. Dallasite? I don't know what they're called.
Oh my God, no way.
Yeah. So I was like,
I'm in Austin right now, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I went to UT Austin. I was just there for South by Southwest. And I grew up in Houston, went to UT Austin. And we actually just moved back to Texas about a year ago. And so we're in Dallas now. So I was like, Priya's my girl. I already know her. It's fine. So why don't you talk to me about how you got involved in the LitFest?
Yeah. So Anu and I actually met at a party and Anu started telling me about what she does. And I was just amazed that there is someone out there whose purpose is to like create more inclusive kids programming. And I was like, oh my God, I am writing this book. It is called Priya's Kitchen Adventures. And the point of the book is to normalize diversity in cooking from a young age and to instill sort of empathy and curiosity in kids. And Anu was like, we got to work together. Like, sounds like we are very aligned in what we're both trying to do. And then, so as soon as like the book was going to come out, I reached out to Anu. She told me about a bunch of things going on, but the LitFest was really, really, really exciting to me because it's rare that I'm in spaces where I get to be surrounded by other Asian American creatives who have the same mission and goal as I do. And I think I've just been so inspired by the increasing diversity in literature and the representation that we are getting and the variety of representation that we are getting in literature, but there is a really long way to go. So whatever we can do to like platform these authors, help each other, support each other. You would be shocked how few in the children's cookbook genre, like most of those cookbooks are authored by white people. And my hope is that maybe my book is one of like just a couple of children's cookbooks by non-white authors. But like my hope is that in 5 years, there's like 50 more cookbooks by non-white authors, because it's such an interesting space, because like when kids are young is when they're developing their taste. It's when they're figuring out what their comfort foods are, what the foods that they're going to be nostalgic for when they're in college and after graduation. And so the idea to be able to shape kids' comfort foods now is really exciting to me.
Well, also food for us is such a big part of our culture, right? Like that's the first thing I want when I go home with my mom's tepla and her khichdi. And I'm Gujarati, as you can tell. But it's such a big part of who we are. And I was reading about your book, Priya's Kitchen Adventures, and I was showing my 10-year-old who just started getting interested. So she's like, she made an omelet for me the other day. I cook. I'm not great, but you know, I like hanging in the kitchen. And so she's really starting to pick up on that. And I was showing her your YouTube videos and your book. And she's like, oh my gosh, I want to be like that. I want to do what she's doing. I'm like, fantastic. I mean, you've already inspired her. And she's taking cooking classes for the summer. And so this book is like, we're definitely getting it. It's a perfect book. But I also like, from what it seems like it's also a fun book. Like it's filled with stories. It's entertaining for kids to be captivated, right?
Yeah, it's like I wanted it to be like not just you open it, it's text. I wanted to sort of rethink the cookbook format. So there's a lot of step-by-step photo diagrams, a lot of sort of choose your own adventure style charts. There's illustrated versions of me as a kid from the very talented illustrator Anu Chauhan. I literally ripped some parts directly from like my diaries as a kid. Aww. Like I was just putting my memories straight in, and I wanted people to just like be right there in the country with young Priya seeing the world through my eyes.
That is amazing. So I know you've written two other books, right?
Three other books, actually.
Three other books. They're in my notes. Indianish, Cooking at Home. What was the third book? Did I miss that one?
The little known first book that I published right out of college about how to basically make amazing meals out of your dining hall food. I wrote and pitched it in college, and then it got published right after I graduated.
Amazing. I feel like it wasn't on Wikipedia. Anyways, all good. Would you consider this book maybe a more emotional journey for you since it seems so personal, or no?
Every book is very personal for me. Like Priya's Kitchen Adventures, I think of it as like a prequel to Indianish. Like if Indianish was about sort of how I became comfortable with my identity and who I was, Priya's Kitchen Adventures is like the story of how I became interested in food in the first place.
What was your relationship to cooking, being brown, growing up? Did you grow up in Texas as well?
Yeah, I grew up in Texas, in Dallas.
Okay, so what area, if you don't mind me asking?
Do you know Farmers Branch?
I do know Farmers Branch very well.
Yeah, I grew up in Farmers Branch.
We have Girl Scout meetings there all the time. So.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, growing up in Dallas, which I'm very aware of the culture here, how was your relationship to being brown and how did cooking play into that?
I was very much someone who, like, I had a really robust family life. Like, I grew up with all of my mommies, mamas, their kids. We had, like, a real, like, commune. But I went to a school where I was one of the only brown kids. So it was sort of like, I, like, check my identity at the door when you go to school. I very much separated the two. When I was home, I loved dal. I loved dosa. I did classical Indian dance. When I was at school, I was just like, how do I fit in with all these white people? That was how I thought about things. And I think a lot of the very classic like child of immigrants tropes apply to me. I was like embarrassed about my food, didn't let my parents pack me dal chawal for lunch, even though that's like all I eat for lunch.
I was going to ask whether you packed anything for lunch.
But really, when I became a professional, my identity was really like the bridge into food. It was what allowed me to carve out a space for myself as a food writer, because I just didn't see Indian food getting the attention and respect that other cuisines did.
Yeah. So when did that click for you then? That was during college years, afterwards?
It was afterwards. It was after I left my first job working for a food magazine. I needed to make money. I needed to pay my rent. And I was like, write what you know. What do you know? I know how to make dal in an instant pot. I know how to make quick chai. So I was just like, my first stories were a lot of like, how to tell when mangoes are ripe, how to like different kinds of dal and how long it takes to cook them in the instant pot, like how to make a shortcut chai at home. These articles, like they were very quick, not a ton of reporting, but I think they, you know, a lot of people texted me that they like have my instant pot dal guide like pinned to their fridge so that they know which dal cooks for which amount of time. So it was like a really cool moment where I was like, oh, my knowledge is something that is like actually helpful for people and is like filling a gap.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously I've heard of you. There seems to be a lot more South Asian food writers, cooks, chefs out there, you know, with their blog, whatever it is, in whatever way they can, sharing the Indian food and culture a lot more. Have you been able to collaborate with any of them?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I consider many of them my friends.
Good. That's awesome.
Someone who I admire so much and who has been just like the most supportive of me in my journey is Mother Joffrey. I feel like my books don't exist without Mother's books. And she has been such a champion for my generation of children of immigrants. And I feel like when I release a new project, she's like the first person cheering for me. And like, she's a force of nature.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. So, Anu and I were talking about South Asian community and support, and we really just need to do it for each other to start off, because that's the way it's going to grow, right? With our own community. And then how did you start working with the New York Times?
I'll be totally honest with you. I remember I looked at the New York Times building and I was like, maybe one day they'll let me write something for them. And I was just so desperate to write for the Times. I like cold emailed the head of the food section, and she was like, do you have any writing clips you can send me? And I at the time didn't have any clips. So I just like sent her a piece I had written in college for a class, The Evolution of San Francisco Chinatown and Chinese American Food.
Okay.
And she basically was just like, we're going to need you to write for some other publications. Can't just like submit a college paper. But eventually, I just kept bothering her with ideas. I was just like relentless in emailing her with every idea I had. And finally, I was like, I would love to write about this Mitai shop that I grew up going to in Houston. It has such a great story. It like basically started that whole Indian area on Hillcroft in Houston.
I was just about to ask you, which one is Hillcroft, right? It has to be on Hillcroft.
Yeah, it's on Hillcroft. It's called Raja Sweets.
Yep.
And she was just like, all right, 500 words on Raja Sweets. And I was like, yes, this is my in. You know, you ever have that feeling where you're just like, I know that I can hit it out of the park. I just need someone to open the door a little bit.
That one yes. That one yes is all you need, for sure. So did you go to Raja Sweets and interview them? Were they like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah, I went to Raja Sweets. The turnaround was so fast because they wanted it to come out in time for Raksha Bandhan. So my husband, who is then my boyfriend, we were in Texas visiting my parents in Dallas. I drove us to Raja Sweets. I reported while he like worked with the photographer and got all the photos. And then we drove back to Dallas and I was in the passenger seat typing the story up while he was driving us back to Dallas. And I was like reading it aloud to him being like, does this sound okay to you?
It was really stressful,
but we did it and we submitted on time.
a lot of the stuff that happens behind the scenes. That's awesome. Are you still doing all the YouTube videos? Because I've seen a few of the on-the-job ones I love.
Yeah.
I was watching the one about the dishwasher, the bagel guy. That was amazing. Is that still happening? And is it just on-the-job or are there other ones?
I do both cooking videos for the Times and I do reported videos. On-the-job is definitely one of the things I feel most proud of. It's a series that celebrates sort of the unseen labor in the food industry, the people who don't get the big glossy magazine profiles. And yeah, I feel like it's been one of the highlights of my career to do that. Season 4 just started with the dishwasher episode and we're filming the rest of season 4 now. And I'm really excited with how it's looking.
Yeah, it was very cool. Again, Anna and I are talking about people who deserve the spotlight, and those people definitely do. I know this book just came out. Any other current projects that you're working on that you can talk about this year?
I'm working on a couple of things. One thing I'm excited about is I'm working on a book of reported personal essays about what it means to be from our generation of children of immigrants and how we can think about our identity in a more complex way and how to advance the discourse beyond representation matters and thinking about like, what does that representation look like? How do we move through the world with our identities? How do we define our identities beyond like the hyphen between Indian American or the space between Indian American? Because I think our identities are actually a lot more fluid. So it'll be personal, but there'll be a lot of reporting. I'll have historians, sociologists, other my brown colleagues, my parents. It's another really personal project. It's my first non-cookbook. So I'm still in the early stages, but it's a thing I'm really excited about.
That's so awesome. Well, congrats on it all. I cannot wait to get your book. And I got to ask, I'm just going to assume your mom was the cook growing up, or maybe it was dad, but if it was mom, whoever it was, how are they feeling about all this? They must be so happy.
Both of my parents cooked growing up because my mom traveled a lot for work. So they sort of switched off. I think they're feeling really good. I mean, I think at first they were just so confused by my career path. And, you know, now people stop them at Costco and are like, are you Ritu Krishna, co-author of Indianish? And I think they get very excited.
Yeah, they're famous here, obviously.
My dad gets stopped and people tell him they like make his dahi recipe and it just like totally makes his day.
Oh, that's so amazing. I'm going to have to go get the autograph at some point. Well, whenever you're in Dallas next, let me know. So then Anu, Priya, anything you want to tell people more about the Uppy Lift Fest or, you know, maybe something that a goal that you have in your mind that you want to share? Like, what do you want to come out of this?
Sure, I can take that first. So from the Lit Fest, we want children, elementary school kids. So the age group for the Lit Fest is 5 to 12. Although we invite even middle schoolers, high schoolers, because they will see, you know, their age group also represented in that Lit Fest. So definitely want children from the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, to join us in this Lit Fest. Once this Lit Fest is successful, we can do it on a yearly basis. And we also want parents to join their kids, because one thing that as an educator I see is, as a parent, I'm always trying to understand, okay, what happened? And that conversation with the kids has to go on, and it has to go on all the time. So we invite the parents to attend with their children as well. We want everyone to support us in marketing this event and then attending this event so that this is successful and it becomes a regular thing.
Priya, did you have anything to add?
I think Anu captured it really well. I'm really, really, really excited to meet the kids, and I'm excited to talk to the other authors.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a fun, there's an awesome group showing up. So let's just crossing my fingers. I'm going to try to see if I can come up. I was just living in New York, and now we had to move to Dallas for my husband's job. So I feel like I'm missing a lot of events. But it's okay. You guys need to come to Dallas now and do events here. I need to start spotlighting. I mean, as you know, Priya, there's tons of Indians, not just in Dallas, but in Texas in general. So anytime for all my interviews, I'm like, can you guys do events here now?
You know, who knows? We'll come and do the Lit Fest in Texas.
Yeah, 100%. Happy, totally happy to help with that. We just did an event with Holy Sheik here. And so I was telling her she was coming for another thing. And I told them, I promise you, there's so many people here out that want to attend these South Asian events, right? But it's usually West or East Coast. So we'll make it happen. We're going to keep working on it. I want to do like a really quick fast round, and each of you can answer the first thing that comes to your mind. Anu, I'll go with you first and then Priya. Anu, what would be your ultimate collaboration this year?
My ultimate collaboration is doing Diwali at White House.
Ah.
I am already working with a few people on that. And, you know, just expansion beyond the tri-state area is one of my biggest priorities. And I have a lot going on. So that would be my first one.
Love it. Priya, who or what would be your ultimate collaboration for this year?
Oh, I love this. It's like putting it out into the universe in the hopes that it happens.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what it is. It's all about the energy. So put it up.
I have gotten to know Meera Nair, the director, extremely well. And I would love to work with her. I think she is absolutely brilliant. Monsoon Wedding just like defined my upbringing. I think she'd be an amazing person to collaborate with.
All right. Well, Meera, if you're listening, just throwing it out there. I think actually they're going to be doing Monsoon Wedding on Broadway, or they're putting something together for that.
Yeah, we had it.
They did. I saw it. Yeah.
Oh, they did. Okay. How was it?
Really good.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Again, we're in Texas here, so I'm missing out on some stuff. Anu, what is your biggest pet peeve?
When people are not on time. I am the daughter of an army officer. So like my dad, like I'm always at places ahead of time. And the Indian standard time doesn't work for me.
You're one of the few.
I'm one of the few.
That's good. That's good. Priya, go ahead.
I like 100% agree with Anu.
Okay.
I feel like one of the reasons that we get along is because we're both punctual people. We both really value reliability and timeliness.
It's a big deal. When you're working with someone, it's a big deal. I mean, Priya is doing this. I don't know, Priya, are you on vacation right now? You're doing this interview at a hotel room. So I really appreciate that.
From a hotel room. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I appreciate it. Anu, if you weren't doing all of this alternate universe, what else would you be doing?
You know, I was destined to be an educator. I was just like, I have had a stint in finance. I worked in marketing, but this had to happen. When I was little, I used to teach myself. I had two different personas. One was me as a child and one was me as an educator. And I used to teach myself. That's how I studied. So I think this was destined.
I love it. Priya?
I think that I would be like a college professor, like an academic. When I was in college, I loved just like sitting with books and doing research. I think that's why I like being a journalist so much. So, yeah.
That should be your next book, Basement with Books. That should be the title. Okay, and last question. If you have a bucket list, what's the one thing you want to check off this year? And that could be not work-related, by the way, of course.
Going on a trip and doing very little planning in advance.
Ah, I like it. Keep it simple, but very important.
I mean, my bucket list is definitely getting some more, as you know, I write books, a few more books up there. And I have so many thoughts about stories from India that are lost. And that has been the new trajectory I'm taking. You know, stories that I heard from my grandparents or parents that I never heard before or I have not heard again. So I just want to keep writing. But then the other thing is just traveling to new places. I'm going to Japan this year in summer, but for December, I don't know which other place, but just keep traveling.
Japan is one of my favorites, one of my favorite trips of all time. So yes, and you will enjoy it. I'm sure you have it all planned, but let me know if you need any recommendations. It's been a couple years. I'm actually going on my first girls trip after, I don't know, 5-7 years. Like a girl, like, you know, we do little trips here and there, but I'm doing a 1-week road trip around Ireland next week.
And I don't think that sounds so fun.
And I haven't left my kids for more than like 2-3 days since they've been born, honestly. And so they're both like, you're going for 8 days? I'm like, I know, it's so long, but it's with my two best friends. It's something we've been dreaming of since we were like in high school. Yeah. And so it's happening next week. I'm like, wow, this is exciting.
You're inspiring me to have another thing in my bucket list.
You know, life, you should. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's with my two oldest friends. I'm like, life is just passing by so fast. Right. And I've known both of them since we were like 5, and something we've just been wanting to do. And one of them just got, we'll edit this out, obviously, but one of them just finished the messy divorce. And I was like, let's celebrate life. Let's go. Let's go do this road trip in Ireland. And so, yes, I'm very excited.
Tuckered Out is hosted by me, Ami Tucker. This episode is produced by Genie Media with Jeannie Saraswathy, Ashley Tuff, Micah Sweetman, Hans Andres, and Laura Radescu. You can follow me at Tuckered Out Podcast on Instagram. And please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts.